So you don't remember those problems with the or discussions as it relates to search and rescue. Do you remember those discussions as it relates to the operational staff requirements, carrying the nuclear depth bomb and not being able to carry out that role for the command?
Well, yeah, I don't know whether it was the nuclear. I don't remember the nuclear depth charge in particular. I remember the requirement, and I don't think the staff requirement stated it would be required a nuclear to carry the nuclear bomb.
It was one of
depth
the
charge. I know that we did. This being taken. No.
So we're talking about some of the problems with the Cayman helicopter, and it can't meet the 1960 operational requirement. Now, was the Cayman at that time when the manufacturer suggested installing another turbine engine, was it a single or was it a dual engine, the original prototype for the
Cayman?
It was a single.
As far as I recall, in my recollection, it was a single engine. And they were going to put another one in, where it's a Seaking.
Was the dual.
It's a dual.
From the start, which was from the RCN's perspective, much more attractive in terms of endurance. And if you lost an engine, you still had the capability of flying on the single engine. Now, what were some of the other problems with the Cayman helicopter? It had the single engine. It didn't meet the all-up weight requirements.
That was the primary one. And I met with the project officer in Bureau at one time, and he'd given us a list of the problems, but all new airplanes have problems, and the command was getting over the problems quite rapidly, and they were modifying it, and that was the history of new airplanes.
Right. Do you have any recollections of going down and visiting with any of the Cayman engineers?
Oh, yes, to discuss these sorts of problems?
We
spent quite a lot of time down there. Johnny Frank probably spent much more time than I did. But we had quite a lot of discussions with them.
Were they quite willing to go to great lengths to remedy some of these problems in order to secure a contract with the RCM?
They will go to any length to do anything if you're prepared to pay them for it. it's contractual. But the only... My recollection is that the only thing that would have overcome their problem is putting another engine in.
Do you have any recollection of how long or how much of a delay that would have caused for the RCN to procure the aircraft by having a second engine installed?
I don't remember at the time what the time was, but obviously you had to go through a whole new certification program for the airplane,
and
that can take a year or two.
Right. Never mind the trials that the manufacturer would undergo before going through certification, I assume.
Yeah, that's right. You know, it's all there. You have to go through it.
Because the original aircraft...
We never found any interest in it in the U.S. Navy at all.
Was the RCN working closely with the RCN when it came to evaluating the Cayman helicopter? Sharing of information...
their project officer in Bureau Air would tell us everything. He kept us totally informed, as far as we know, on all that. I had some meetings with him and other people, and I can't remember who our AE representative in Washington at that time was, because we had an AE fellow on the staff there.
This would have been the joint staff in Washington?
Yeah.
And there, I assume that there would have also been a representative in the UK?
Oh, there was, yes.
Because the Cayman helicopter was not the only helicopter that the RCN was looking at this time. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the other aircraft that we were looking at the same time?
Well, we looked at the Cayman. We looked at the Piasecki, and there was certain pressures that we would go with the same as the Air Force went and get a combined of one. I seem to recall Dave Golden, who was then head of DSS, put up a paper that where the three services should buy, the Army should buy
the Vertol 107?
Because the, yeah, the 107, the twin engine, the 107, which the Army bought later on, and then the search and rescue would buy it, and then we should buy it. But it just didn't fit. And one of the reasons we were not interested in it was that this was after we moved towards the Sea King, this all came up, after we dropped the command. That we couldn't, I've lost my train of thought, sorry.
Couldn't embark the larger Vertol 107?
We couldn't embark the larger one, and also the Sea King had integrated AS system. So did the 107, but the 107 was not taken on. And I remember Hank Isaac and these people who were more experts in this field than I was saying that it wasn't the airplane that didn't do anything as good as the Sea King could, and it didn't really meet our requirements. It wouldn't fit the ship anyway with two great ropes, you know.
No, that would have presented all sorts of
but
problems.
But this came out as a political issue, and then at the same time, the English Prime Minister was visiting Ottawa, and he said that they would buy some Canadian-built aircraft, which I think was the British Army, with the Beaver or something like that, or whatever, if we would consider buying British helicopters. We knew it was no good, but Johnny and I had to go to England regardless. Johnny and I trip, but we knew we were going, what the answer was before we went. And I told CNTS that you got to go, Johnny, so it's come down from that we would send somebody to look at the team over to look at the British ones until they've been run around England.
Now, what was the British aircraft that we were
British
looking at?
The British was the Westland, one that they...
The Wessex?
The Wessex. That's right, it was the Wessex.
Now, from your perspective, what was the problem with the Wessex?
Well, two or three problems with it. I don't think it had quite the lifting capability that we were looking for that the Sea King had. And the third one, it had a Napier engine, which had a terrible amount of troubles. And I can't remember it.
Was that a gas turbine engine, the Napier? A
gas turbine engine, yes, but it was also made of a material that was rather critical for corrosion at sea. And although they can claim they protected it, just needed somebody's spanner to slip on it, or one of the mechanic screwdriver or something, and before you know, you got a problem if he doesn't fill it in. But it just was not, from our view, suitable for the type of operation that we were doing from the back of a destroyer.
Right.
Those were the primary reasons. Mind you, we were scratching pretty deep to find reasons we didn't want it.
Do you remember looking at the Bristol helicopters at all?
We, at one time, Bristol asked us, had a Bristol helicopter. But this was before, there was some connection with Bristol.
I remember.
But that was the early Bristol one. This was back in the very early. Back in 53, I think, it was the first helicopter.
Right, the 173, I think, was the first
model.
Yeah,
that's right. I talked to Bristol's, and it was agreed that we would go and look at it. And somebody from Stour, and I was going to go over and look at it. Well, I can't remember. You're pushing me. This is 53, so. And then staff decided for some reason or other, it didn't meet the staff requirements, so we never went.
Right.
That's really what happened. But I, as to why it didn't meet the staff requirement, or well, I don't know. But it was more for the icebreaker than for the...
An ASW.
ASW, yeah.
And then Bristol came along with another variant, the 193, I guess, which was supposed to be an ASW helicopter, purposely designed for that, but was also rejected by the RCN.
I don't remember.
Now, if we're coming to the point where we reject the Cayman helicopter and we send down the HSS-2 evaluation team to look at the Sikorsky, we're talking about an aircraft that's double the weight of the Cayman, must have presented all sorts of difficulties for all sorts of different directorates and staffs in order, because we've already started the conversion program of the Saint Laurent class destroyers. We've conducted a number of trials. We're getting ready, and we'll do the next trial, which is Assiniboine, when she completes the conversion. So we're spending an awful lot of money on this conversion program. Now we've got to find an aircraft. A number of officers must have been very concerned about the weight and size of the Sea King compared to the Cayman.
Oh, we were all concerned with the size, but the Sea King basically was the only aircraft that would meet the staff requirement. And we were in the middle of that. I've got a piece of paper on that.
We'll just stop the tape here for a second then. So, in order to come to terms with whether or not the Sea King helicopter is going to be the right choice for the RCN, the Navy puts together an evaluation team and sends them down to the Sikorsky plant. You're very familiar with these officers. They were working on your staff.
Mm-hmm.
They had very little time to look into this because of the conversion program proceeding.
Well, that's right. You know, the panic stations were there. that we had to get something done. And John took the team down. I remember that. Now it's coming back. I don't know whether you've got their report or whatever they issued when they got back, or if you found one, I don't know.
Yes, I saw some of the reports that were filed by the evaluation team back to headquarters, and was very impressed with the quality of the reports that were written by these officers, and they were certainly well versed in their particular duties and had a great background or wealth of knowledge that related to the helicopters.
Yes, they were all.
Particularly, a name that keeps coming up is John Frank, that was on your staff.
Oh, John, of course, you know where John ended up. He quit and he was running the big company in Ottawa on making forms and things, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, John became managing director of.
Oh, really?
The president of that company, yeah, from that Richmond Road. Do you remember the Ottawa down there?
On Richmond Road.
Yeah, it was a big company, a printing company.
No, I'm not familiar with it at this point.
And he retired from that. But I saw him in Ottawa last year just for a moment. But he, John was a brain. And of course, one of the biggest brains was young Cruikshank.
And his particular area of...
He was a winger to John at that point.
I see.
Time.
All right.
They were both graduates from Cranfield, of course. They both had master's degree from Cranfield. But we'd sent them there.
And they were both in the directorate of...
In my directorate.
Right, which was...
Director of Aircraft Design and Production.
Right, okay.
And the other members of the team were in Hank Isaac.
Mm-hmm.
Hank was the director of avionics at that time.
Right.
And Wagner, was it Wagner? Ross Wagner, wasn't he down there?
Yes, he was.
Fisher or Wagner, I forgot the names now. They were a very competent team.
So they all went down to have a look at the Sea King helicopter.
They went down to have a look at the Sea King. You see here, after we had after the twin funnels, I called Thor Stevenson, because he was the head of United Aircraft of Canada.
Based in Montreal.
Based in Montreal, yes. It was then Canadian Pratt & Whitney, and then it became United Aircraft, which was owned by Sikorsky. I was all Sikorsky were owned by United, you know, with all that. And I remember Thor had tried to sell us the Sea King before, and we'd said it wasn't big enough, but we were running out of time when these things were happening. And so I phoned Thor and arranged a meeting down in Sikorsky's, and I think John came to that meeting. I certainly would have done. And we discussed what the possibilities were, as opposed to somebody from DSS came down as well, but see if we could want Canadian content and what they could do to build in Canada, because all these things were going on,
right,
when the team went out.
Now, John Frank, a number of individuals have given him credit for the key role that he played in the actual bear trap system.
Oh, a very key role. Well, there's no question. John played a major role in the bear trap.
And he was able to make that system work when others couldn't or thought that was not the way to go. I'm thinking of the USN, for example, or the British. They had entirely different systems.
No, that's right, because we talked to the British on this system. And then, as I mentioned here, the British came up and said it was going to... Did I put it in here?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I remember getting this call from London or something, or signaling, saying the Brits said we were going to introduce a condition and inevitably we were going to, the airplane, that thing would stall. Did you get that from anybody else?
Yes.
And I sent John to London, and I've written it down somewhere.
The other thing that I was interested in is that in as much as the Sea King met the 1960 staff requirement, you were then faced with another problem too. I mean, you had to... the RCN needed power folding rotor blades, and they needed the tail to be folded as well,
right,
to fit into the hangar.
That's right.
So did you personally or members of your staff then go consult with Sikorsky to find out whether
We paid all the development costs for the folding hangars and the folding tail. That was all part of our contract with Crosby's.
Oh, I see. Oh, I was unaware of that.
Oh, yes, that was... we paid for all of that. You didn't get anything free from the aircraft contractor, I tell you that. We paid all the costs involved.
Do you have any recollection of...
I thought it already had folding wings. It had rotors folded automatically, but we wanted to fold the tail.
Right.
And the main thing was, folding the tail wasn't a difficult design, but at any time... when you make a change which has a significant structural problem in the airplane and you have to prove the design, you do some testings, put it through so many movements and this and that and at the vibration levels. You know, there's problems once you start doing that, particularly in helicopters.
Right.
And we had to do those trials down at Sikorsky's. They did it for us, but we were the design authority.
So
by this time, we had changed the RCF-RCN agreement,
mm-hmm,
that we were totally responsible for the design of our aircraft. The original agreement, so any mod we did to an airplane had to go back to
RCF,
because on airplanes, there were two design authorities in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Transport for civil aircraft, RCAF for military aircraft.
Right.
Well, we didn't have any capability when the RCAF, I wasn't in Ottawa when the original agreement, and it was said that they would, because they were the only people who could approve design.
Mm-hmm.
Well, later on, I managed to amend the RCF agreement that the RCN became a design group. And there were three organizations, and my organization was on the same basis as Transport and the Air Force for approving of aircraft in Canada.
Do you remember what year that was? Roughly?
I would think it was roughly about 62. The Air Force had a lot to do, and they had their programs, and we were a bit of a bloody nuisance because, you know, they had a system which we weren't part of it. But
and there was a normal inter-service rivalry as well to contend with, I suppose.
I don't think there was much inter-service rivalry on this one that I can recall. I knew the Air Force technical people very well, and they knew it, and I would phone them up and say, look, we're sending, can you have a look at this? And I know during all the Avenger conversions, they came down. And it could have been 60 or 61.
Right. But this, from everything that I've seen, certainly would have eliminated the thorn in the side of the RCN that had been there for a very long time.
It had been there, and technically we had some... Oh, I could tell you a story, but it's quite unrelated, going back to the early Shearwater days and having a great fight with the Air Force.
Right. I'm sure that that would have been the case.
On the technical side, the people I knew in the Air Force, they didn't particularly want the work,
mm-hmm.
because they weren't staffed to look after naval requirements.
Right.
And what's more, they didn't have very much knowledge of the special requirements of naval aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
So when I slipped it in, when the Air Force agreement was being renegotiated, I just slipped it in. I didn't tell anybody in staff or anything. I told my Air Force friends, and they said, good luck to your job. And I just slipped it in, say, delete that fire. And it went through.
Good thing for the RCN?
Oh, yeah, it was a good thing for us, because then we could do what we wanted.
Mm-hmm. For the limited time that was left before integration and then unification, and then until the Navy lost naval aviation.
Yeah. Right.
So how would you characterize your staff then during these years, 59 through 64?
64 to 65. Very capable. I was very fortunate with my staff. I had very capable people. Johnny Frank. Johnny left, and after Johnny left, I had to play a bit more part, because he was just capable of doing the job and he'd keep me informed, you know?
Right.
And after John had gone, another fellow came in who was not particularly familiar with dealing with contractors and things.
Do you remember when John Frank left?
63, 64 seems to stick in my mind.
All right, so...
But honestly, I wouldn't swear to it.
So he left before the Assiniboine trials then, with the haul down? Or about that period?
After the Assiniboine trial. In the middle of the Assiniboine trial.
All right.
In the middle of the Assiniboine trial.
And he left the service then?
Yeah, I think so. What was that? I think it was then. Because John did a trip across at the request of the Canadian Aerospace Technical Institute to all the members in Canada and branches, and gave a lecture on the development of the hold down system.
Oh, I see.
He went right across Canada. They asked if somebody could do it.
Oh, I remember that. I've seen the copy of the actual notes that were used for that lecture.
Okay, well, that's John did it then, and that was one of the... Because it was his area.
Right.
And I couldn't tell about it. Oh, John's a very capable individual. And Cruikshanks, of course, is brilliant.
I heard that it was John Frank that went home and worked on one of his children's Meccano sets or something in order to make a mock-up model of the bear trap system.
It could have been. I don't recall hearing that. I hear some story of a model, but I don't know if it was John, was it? I thought it was somebody else.
Yeah, everybody gives credit to John Frank for that, so... It's something that you'll never see in the paperwork.
But John was very capable, and he ran the program. They were his programs. As you see, he went on all the trips, and he would just keep me informed, because I had two other directorates, and all the money banks were there. An administration group that we were spending our money in. You had to fight for your money a bit, you know, in the government.
Mm-hmm. Especially during this time period. So if you look back on the whole bear trap and haul down program and the acquisition procurement of the Sea King helicopter and making this whole concept work, the DDH concept work, what would you attribute that success to as it relates to the RCN? I mean, the British were going down a different path with their harpoon and grid system. The Americans were embarking helicopters aboard their carriers, and they were experimenting with their DASH program. The Canadians went down an entirely different road. And what would you attribute that success to?
Oh, I think the success was from the trials that we did in the S-58, with the Air Force S-58. Who was involved in those? I can't remember.
Ken Gibbs was the one that actually got the aircraft.
And the one before that Billy Frayne did.
Mm-hmm.
Because Billy Frayne was working for me when all this was developed.
Right.
See, I was very fortunate. I had very capable staff. Of course, Pat Whitby was up there at one time, at this time, too, for 2 or 3 years. And they were all very capable. And they were great losses to the service, but people were getting unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
Cruikshanks was the brain. Then his father was the brain.
So was he responsible for the avionics?
No, Cruikshanks was working with John.
With John, all right.
No, Hank Isaac.
Was avionics.
It was avionics, and Hank had been around a long time then. He had some good stuff in there. The Wagner, and they mentioned in that team that went down there.
I'll just stop it for a second here. So you attribute the success to the capable people that were working on your staff, and VX-10 would have been another group that was closely associated with this project. Is there any other factor?
Well, I think what you should... one point we haven't covered. After that meeting, and we decided to go ahead, we went out to industry and telling them what we wanted. Now, Canada Air replied.
Mm-hmm.
Ferries replied, and one other company, and they were all briefed individually by John, each company, of what was required.
Was Doughty the other one?
I don't think Doughty were done, but Doughty were obviously the makers of the haul down system.
Right.
And we got the three proposals in, which we looked at, and I remember going through them with John. He'd done the detailed analysis. And obviously ferries was the nearest thing to what we were looking at. He told each company exactly what we wanted to do. And ferries came up with a bear trap design. You know, this was schematic at the moment, you know. There
right.
was a lot more to be done on
mm-hmm.
it. And that was the one, and then we gave ferries a contract to develop it.
Right.
Of course, typical aircraft manufacturer, the money they quoted to develop it never went anywhere near around. It just went up and up, and I remember at times having a little battle to get more money for the
additional expenses.
But there were other people involved in this as it went on. There was another engineer called Atwood.
Jim Atwood?
Jim Atwood, and another one called Craig Balson.
Mm-hmm.
And they were both somewhere on
Jim Atwood was VX-10?
Yeah, Jim Atwood had been a VX-10 one time. I can't remember exactly. But he did it. And then Craig Balson was on John's staff. And he did a lot on the constant tension winch. In fact, I remember him going down to Michigan University to talk to some guy down there on.
Oh, really?
on something in this in relationship to this. I'm almost certain it was relationship, but there were a lot of feelings. In fact, I was asked that there was some time that we were approached that we should be given an invention award, and who were the people who should get it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very difficult one, because you had to put the whole team in, and I think therefore it never got down to it. You couldn't say it was
one person.
He was the leader of the team, but there was all the other people involved. Like,
right.
And it was really almost impossible to say who should get any money. And it would have been unfair, I think, to do it. And they weren't prepared to give out a lot of money anyway, you know, with the Bible.
Right.
It was all forgotten.
I'll just stop the tape here.